accession number 20362, reel 4.
Battle reel 4.
We managed to get back to the safety, if you could call it the safety, of our trenches and get a bit of rest. You must remember that we, you know, being in the front line like this, that you can't get very much rest. It's a matter of one or two people being awake all the time and someone else just squatting down and getting a bit of shut-eye. Because you must remember that all we had was our equipment, a thin blanket and a mosquito net that we carried, and our ground sheet, which we used as protection from the rain. And it was beginning to rain now. The monsoons, as I said, had started early, and it was coming down, and you were continually wet. There was very little shelter, and rain continually poured into your trench, and it had to be bailed out. And this is the sort of conditions. I mean, you kept your clothes on. You didn't change your clothes. You didn't wash. You kept your boots and socks on all the time. You just couldn't, because you never knew when you were going to be attacked. And at night, these attacks came in. The Japs used to use jitter tactics. They would shout, "Hello, Johnny, where are you? Where are you?" And of course, they were hoping that you would open up with your guns and things. But we'd obviously been instructed that we mustn't fire at night, and if we had to use any means of keeping them off, we had to use grenades. And this is what we did. And as they came forward, so we used to grenade them. And if it got to the position where they got too close, then obviously you had to use your gun to your rifle to keep them off. However, it went on like this for some time. And eventually, they were trying to get a small tank up so that we could have some direct fire, heavy fire, into the bunkers to move them, to get them out of the tennis court area and the district commissioners. This is where the problem was. One of our companies was in such a perilous position down on the corner of the road, right at the bottom, and they were continually being fired on over open sights by the Japanese 75, and they were taking terrific casualties because they had no shelter, and they were being fired on directly from above. And no company or no person could stand that for so long, and so we had to try and move the Japanese from the district commissioner's bungalow and the tennis courts, where they were dug in so deeply in bunkers. We were trying to get a small tank, a Stuart, I think it was, up to us in our position, so that we could get the tank to help us and make a frontal attack. The first tank, I believe, it was too steep for him. He couldn't get up. And then they tried, they had an armoured bulldozer in the division, so they got this armoured bulldozer around and tried to tow the tank up with this bulldozer. But it got so far, and the tank, of course, it got so steep that it pulled the bulldozer back down on it. And that was the end of that little episode. Anyway, they got another bulldozer, an armoured bulldozer, and they felt this was the only way that we were going to move them was to get a direct fire from a tank. And so this bulldozer, the chappy, bulldozed a track up through, and the tank managed to get, and we got the tank into our lines, D Company lines. Anyway, it was decided that the next day that we had to get in there and get them out, make the attack. Our other companies were also on the hill, of course, but couldn't move because as soon as they made the frontal attack, so they were mown down by machine gun fire, and the 75 millimeter gun, which was these 75 millimeter guns were mountain guns, and they could get them in the right position and camouflage so well that they were so deadly and they caused so many casualties. You could hear the gunfire and almost immediately the shell exploded amongst you, and that was how close they were. And it wasn't like our guns when they fired from behind us. You could hear them whistling over with the Jap guns. They would fire and immediately the shell would explode. Anyway, we got this tank with us in our lines, and it was decided that we should make the assault on the tennis court. This is a tennis court that caused so much. Well, the tennis court itself was not causing any trouble. It was the bunkers around it. This tennis court, of course, was used in peacetime by the district commissioner and his visitors when they came to stay with him. And it was just up above where he lived in his bungalow. Anyway, the next morning, we had to make this assault. We were all ready. And the difficult part was that from the top down onto the tennis court was a drop of something like 12 foot. And this was the problem with this position and with the other positions. It was all ledges, and this is why they were dug in so deep. And it was going to be very difficult for the tank commander to get his tank down over this perpendicular drop of 12 foot. It was a matter of he's going to have to jump down with his tank down over. And I could see it was going to be very difficult. However, we lined up ready to make the attack. They put in a terrific barrage of gunfire from our artillery. And they had an airstrike, but we knew that this wasn't going to be too effective because they were so deeply dug in. However, it had to be done. This was the only way. And so we moved forward, and the tank slithered down and then fell down over the ridge, and his machine gun in 70s. It was a Grant Lee tank with a 75 millimeter gun. It was an obsolete tank, really, but like all the other stuff that we had to make do with, because they kept telling us we want the main tanks and what have you for the assault on the second front when it's open. So, anyway. We went forward, the tank firing a 75 into the bunkers and machine guns going and us firing as well as we moved forward. And the Japs started to run. And we knew that we'd done it then. And they were being mown down as they ran out of their trenches. And the scene on the top there, it was terrific. The bodies... where they'd lain there right from, they must have been there weeks, I should think. They were covered in flies, maggots, bloated, and the stench was terrific. However, we still had to winkle them out of their trenches where they were dug in so deep, and we called them Bangalore torpedoes. What it was. Was basically an explosive on the end of a bamboo pole with a fuse, and this had a 5-minute fuse, and you lit it and pushed it into the hole, and in 5 seconds it exploded. Some of them, the Japs didn't know quite what it was, and they were pulling them in with them, which was of course what we wanted, and they were being destroyed. But some were pushing them back out, and so it was decided that we cut down a few to 2 seconds, and there was no chance then of them doing anything about it. Anyway, we did get onto the position, and that was it. The Japs were gradually cleared from the other positions, and we won the day. They'd lost such a lot of casualties here, but we got the main part of that road, and we could now move forward after we'd started to clear up. But we still had the problem up to our right, which was up towards Bouli Baz, where they were still on Cookie Picket, Jail Hill, and all these sort of places, and they were still giving us trouble. But at least we got that part of the road open, and we could get some tanks forward now and help the rest of the division. This had been the main stumbling block, and it had taken us from the middle of April until the relief and the capture of Kohima, which occurred on the 13th of May 1944. And it was with some relief that we now found that we could walk about without being fired on from snipers and what have you. But we were still being shelled by these 75s from the Japs, who were on the hills looking onto Kohima and being covered by them. And it was still a difficult position, but the road was now open from Dimapur up to Kohima and on through where the tanks could now manoeuvre. But we'd been here now for 3 weeks, I suppose. I was unshaven. I was filthy dirty. I was covered in imbidigo. I was covered in lice. I had boils on my arms. My feet were in a terrible condition because I hadn't had the boots off as everybody else who'd been on that position were. Our feet was in a terrible condition, and thin, hungry, thirsty, and tired. Yes, we were all in a terrible condition, really, after 3 weeks. And they decided to pull us back now, and we went back to Zubza, where we were completely stripped. They'd moved up some large containers which they'd had fuel in, I should think, and they cut them down in half, and they were using them as baths. They were filling them with water. They had large stoves there and heating water, and we all had a bath in these, and of course we were seen by the medical people and treated for all our diseases that we had. My face was covered in sores. It was difficult to have a shave, but it had to come off, and so we did. And then we were covered in a mauve. Oh goodness knows what they called it, and shaved under our arms and round our privates, and we were in a disgusting state. And then they moved us right the way back to Dimapur, and where we had a rest and recuperated. It was here that we were visited by an INSA party, which included Veer Lynn, and it was a most enjoyable time after what we'd been through. And I can remember I had my arm in a sling because I was suffering with these dratted boils. It was something I'd never had in my life. And anyway, the show had finished, and it was really hot. I mean, the temperatures were anything up to 100 degrees, and you know, very, very hot. And I was clapping, and obviously I'd got thin, and off went my wedding ring, signet ring, and of course there was hundreds of troops in this place, audience, and I thought, God, I'm never going to find that. Anyway, I waited behind with a few chaps until the area had cleared, everybody had gone, and we started a search for this ring. And do you know, out of all that mess and muck that there was there, we found it. Anyway, here I think I better add that later on, when I was on the troop ship travelling to Japan after the war, I was having a wash, and the ring slipped off again, and down the plug hole it went, and it's down the bottom of the sea, and in the Yellow Sea somewhere. Never recovered it from there, and so the wife had to buy me a new one when I came home. Anyway, it wasn't long. We recuperated and had all new clothes and boots and what have you, and on the move again. We seemed to be always on the move, never staying anywhere very long. We got to push on. Push on was the cry, and so. We got up to, we're taken back up to Kohima again. Of course, the roads and all that had been cleared, and they were advancing the frontline troops, and they'd cleared some of the Japs from some of the hills, and it was our turn again to take over as the front troops. It was decided that instead of going along the road, Dorsets would make a left flanking movement to come up to Ardura Spur, where there was still Jap position. And the 4th Brigade were still coming in from on our right, coming down from Bulibaz. We started off, and something went wrong, and we had to come back again. By this time, of course, Kohima. They'd brought up a hospital. There was a hospital, advance, I suppose, field dressing hospital or something like that, where all the casualties were coming in. And anyway, after a couple of days, they decided we move off again. So we started to go down over to the left. It was a long drag to get down over the hill to make this left flanking movement. Anyway, we got down to the paddy fields, down to the bottom, and we knew the Japs could see us moving down there because they were firing at us, but we were too far away, we were out of range anyway. But they still tried. And anyway, after marching all day in single file, we eventually came to the bottom, right to the bottom of what we called was Big Tree Hill. Now this was to get back up again onto the road which goes from Kohima to Imphal. As I said before, the road was continually under fire and it was impossible to get along it, and the Japs had to be moved out before it could be used. And so this is what happened. We had to make these flanking movements, try and get behind them and clear them out. We got to Big Tree Hill. I can remember it was getting, it wasn't dark, but it was getting on in the day. We'd been going all day and eventually got to this position at the bottom of our Ardura Spur, and it was called Big Tree Hill. And we started to climb. It was a struggle because here again it was so steep and the jungle was so thick. Someone had done a patrol and they said that there was no Japs on the hill that we were climbing. Anyway, we got so far and suddenly we came under fire. So it was decided that we wouldn't go any farther that night because darkness was coming down anyway, and so we had to stay where we were and dig in, which was the usual thing when we came up against something like that, and you must dig in and make a defensive position. So we started to dig in. It was so hot, and we had all our equipment on, so we took our equipment off, put out a forward defensive position, started to dig in. We were in tin helmets. We weren't, our battalion weren't allowed to wear bush hats. We had tin helmets all the time in the front line. And I thought, oh, so hot. And all you've got to dig in with is your entrenching tool, which is a small tool, and you can't dig very much with that. And it's really hard work. Anyway, I got down about a foot of my trench. And I took my helmet off like that, and suddenly the Japs attacked again. Then came the mortars and grenades and machine gun fire. And before I could get down, lie down on the ground, I felt a slap in the back of the head, and I was knocked out. I went down, well, presumably I went down, because when I came round, I was lying on the ground, and blood was pouring out the back of my head. And they shouted for the stretcher bearer, and they came and they put the first aid dressing on my head. I'd regained consciousness by now, and bandaged it up, put me on a stretcher, and then we had to go all the way back that we'd taken that day, and they were carrying me on a stretcher all the way back. And eventually we got back to the Kohima again, where the first aid hospital was. I can't remember what hospital it was. It was full of casualties. I wasn't all that bad. It was just a bit of shrapnel that I caught in the back of the head from a mortar or something. The majority, they were serious injuries. They'd lost legs, they'd lost arms. People were shouting and screaming. And it was such a lot of noise going on. People were screaming. Anyway, I got put into a bed and I was attended to. I had an operation. They removed a bit of shrapnel, and I thought, oh, that's all right. And then 3 days later, I had such a terrific pain in the back of my head and all down my neck. And I told the nurse, the sister, and she had a look at it, and I said, oh. She said, oh, it's gone bad. And of course there was no penicillin or anything like that. We hadn't got penicillin. This was a trouble that the gunshot wounds were getting gangrenous, and this was a trouble. There was nothing they could do about it except to amputate the legs and arms and what have you. And of course, I suppose I was a little bit naive. I wasn't very old. I was still sort of in 1920s. And I thought, my goodness, I mean, what's going to happen now? You know, they can't do anything about it. There's nothing to cure it. It's gone gangrene, and that's it. Anyway, I had another operation, and they drained it off and put a drip in there or something, and it gradually got better. And after a time, they sent me back. I went back to a convalescent place at Shillong. It was very nice. There's a hill station there, not too far away. Yes, there wasn't very much news getting through, but I understand that the, or at least I understood that the battalion were still pushing on, taking positions and moving on down the road, which had to be cleared to Imphal, because Imphal had been surrounded by the Japanese and it had to be relieved to get to, they were still being provisioned, etc., from the air, and they had to open the road in order to get supplies on through. And so our division were pushing on down through through Maram and on through, I think, to Milestone 109, where eventually they joined up with troops who had been pushing up from Imphal, and they joined up at Milestone 109. But I was still out in convalescent, wondering what was going to happen to me. I didn't think I was going to be sent home because it wasn't serious enough, and I understood it was the wound was healing all right now. And anyway, eventually I started to make my way back to the battalion. The battalion now had, after joining up and opening the road to Imphal at Milestone 109, had pulled back with the rest of the division to Milestone 82 at Maram, I think it is, or was. And we're now encamped there. I eventually got back to them. I think it was somewhere time when you're in this position means nothing to you, really. You take each day as it comes. The date and things like that means nothing. I think it must have been somewhere around July or August, because I'd been wounded on the 4th of June 1944, and it was now either July or August, somewhere around August, I think. I got back to the battalion. I found them encamped on a spur at Maram. They were under large tarpaulin sheets with beds that they'd made up from wood in the jungle, and covered with their ground sheets and put their blankets on them. And I had to find myself room under one of these tarpaulins with and make a bed up. However, I soon settled back in again. It was not a very good position here, because there was a lot of scrub typhus about, and one or two of our people had contracted this, and it was quite a serious situation. But however, we remained there, and our casualties had been such, we'd lost such a lot of people through wounds and illness and all sorts of things, and malaria, cholera, and goodness knows what, yellow fever, that we had to get some reinforcements. I believe that the divisional commander refused to take Indian troops, because we were an all-British division, and therefore he wanted to keep it as such and refused to take any reinforcements, which meant that some of the battalions were down to three companies or less than that, because they'd had to disband some of the companies to bring them up to strength. It was here that they